Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Montgomery Gentry getting us underway today on Route 51 as we look at a newly legalized crop and a possible new path to prosperity for Wisconsin farmers. I'm Glenn Moberg. Industrial hemp used to be widely cultivated in the United States, but it was banned for decades after World War II because it is closely related to marijuana. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson once grew hemp on their Virginia farms. The plant has historically been used to make paper, clothing, and rope, but it has many other uses, as we'll find out today. In 2014, the U.S. Farm Bill allowed the limited, supervised cultivation of hemp, and now Wisconsin has joined more than 30 other states in embracing the resurrected potential cash crop. Our guests today on Route 51 are Senator Patrick Teston, a Republican from Stevens Point who spearheaded the bill legalizing hemp through the state legislature. Also here in our Wausau studio is Larry Konopacki, General Counsel for the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance. And joining us from our studio in Eau Claire, we have Ken Anderson, founder and CEO of Legacy Hemp, a hemp seed and marketing company based in Prescott, Wisconsin. Well, we'd like to hear from you. What do you think about legalized hemp farming? Do you have any questions about it? If so, give us a phone call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, our web page, wpr.org/Route51, and I'll read it live on the air. So, Patrick, Ken, and Larry, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be on.
Thanks for having us.
Well, why don't we start out with you, Senator Teston? The Farm Freedom Act, which enables the cultivation of industrial hemp in Wisconsin, was signed into law by Governor Walker on November 30th of last year. You championed the legislation in Madison. So tell us about the new law.
Well, this is really exciting news for the state of Wisconsin and our farmers across the state, that for the first time since 1957, we are going to be able to grow industrial hemp here in the state. Now, a little bit of a backstory, Wisconsin was at one time a national leader in this crop, but because, as you mentioned in the lead into this, its close affiliation with its cousin, the marijuana plant, we haven't been able to grow it in that time. And so because of the 2014 Farm Bill, it really opened up the door for states to reintroduce this under various pilot programs run by these various states. And so we've now joined our neighbors of Michigan, Minnesota, and Illinois to reintroduce this crop. And there's so many different uses for this. And what I'm really excited about is that when we first started this process early last year, we weren't sure we were ever going to get to a point where the governor was going to sign us into law. And
was it difficult to get him on board?
I think our biggest challenge initially was just trying to educate our colleagues in the legislature, telling them exactly what this plant is, what it isn't, to differentiate it from its cousin, the marijuana plant. And once we made that case, it became pretty clear that this is going to be a huge windfall for the state. When you take a look at our farmers who are struggling with low commodity prices in corn and soy and other grains, this is really an opportunity to introduce a cash crop into their portfolios to raise their margins. And what's really exciting about this is that when this program went live, when the applications were being processed, we thought initially if we could get a few dozen farmers in the first year, that would be a huge success. But since the deadline for the application went through, over 350 applications were filed. So initially I said,
that's a lot of farmers.
That is a lot of farmers. To put that in comparison, the states like Kentucky and Minnesota, when they introduced their industrial hemp pilot programs, they only had a few dozen in their first year. So the fact that we are over 350 goes to show there is a huge demand for this cash crop, and it's going to be another opportunity for us to lessen ourselves on a foreign import, which we import almost $600 million per year from countries like China and Canada.
Where they're growing hemp right now.
Exactly.
You represent Wisconsin's 24th Senate District that covers parts of Wood, Portage, Adams, Washera, Monroe, and Jackson counties. Are we going to see hemp fields in your Senate District?
I believe we will, yes. In fact, I've spoken to a couple individuals who have expressed interest of growing industrial hemp within the 24th Senate District. And what's great about this plant is that it's not a water-intensive plant. So in places like the Central Sands, where we always seem to be talking about water quantity and quality issues and the groundwater table. So this is a plant that doesn't require a lot of water. There's no known pesticides for it. So this could really be a game changer for the area.
Larry, what is the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance?
Well, we're a real new organization, not surprisingly, because we've got a new law that made this even possible here, as you've been talking about.
Do you even have a website? I looked for one on Google, and I didn't see one.
It's on the way. It's on the way. And right now we're really reaching out to people to see to gauge their interest in joining forces to try to inform both the public and our own members, and primarily to keep attention on those areas of advocacy that are still necessary to allow this industry to flourish. And we're getting a lot of interest. To be honest with you, we spent a lot more time working through the details of getting this up and launched than more than we have on building our membership at this point. But that will all come, and there's a great deal of interest. And there's actually a number of other organizations out there that are growing and being set up, and everybody's looking to collaborate. Nobody seems to be trying to fence anybody else out, and so it's an exciting time.
What kinds of businesses or people do you have as members of your group right now?
We've got growers, we've got processors, we've got people who are just interested, we've got retailers, we've got consumers, really from the beginning to the end of the process. We've even got a few who have expressed interest who are in the lending industries and are hoping to learn more about how some of those sides of the business will become more available as we move forward.
How do you get involved in it?
Actually, I worked with Senator Teston on this in my previous employment when I worked for the legislature. And when I left to go into private practice, I had been working with the Farm Bureau. Primarily, the Farm Bureau has been carrying most of the weight on this. And it just became obvious that the industry needed to grow up really quickly. And
are you connected with the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation?
We're a member. We're joining
you're
the federation.
You're a member, but you're not a subsidiary.
No, right.
So you were an advocate for this before the law got passed.
Well, I was an information source, and I helped the senator and his counterparts in the assembly to put the legislation together. And it gave me a window into the real nuts and bolts and details of this that put me in a position when I came out of that employment to recognize that we really needed to do a lot more. And so we didn't – I took it on in the hopes that we wouldn't fail to realize the full opportunity.
And how is the new industry, the hemp industry in Wisconsin, taking shape since that bill was signed into law?
It's taking shape very well. As the senator pointed out, we've got hundreds of people who have applied and have already received licenses. If everyone grew all of the already approved acreage for hemp, we would have 2,200 acres this year, which is far exceeds by an order of magnitude anything that we expected. We've got some movement at the federal level at this point to ease even some of the restrictions that are in place now that will probably remove obstacles that some people see as hindering this industry. Mm-hmm. So it's really growing and growing fast.
Ken Anderson, tell us a little bit about Legacy Hemp and your personal journey as a hemp marketer and seed producer.
Well, actually, it's really nice to be coming back to my home state. Legacy Hemp is rather new. I've had other businesses involved with hemp, but Legacy Hemp is our seed company that is based out of We have operations in Kentucky, North Dakota, Minnesota, and now Wisconsin. We do EASCA certified seed production. I was actually the first person to legally import hemp seed into the country under 7606 of the Farm Bill.
All right, just a second for our listeners. EASCA stands for Association of Official Seed Certifying Agencies. So what does that mean that your hemp seeds have that certification?
Well, right now in America, hemp cannot be under what's called PVP, which is plant variety protection. So one of the ways to protect cultivars and intellectual property is to have certified seed. So what that does, certified seed will create, there's a standard that the seed has to for purity, germination, and there's standards that are set. So basically it tells farmers that they're not just getting grab bag seed out of nowhere. They're going to get seed, and they're going to know basically how it's going to perform, what it's going to yield, and it's a control of the IP.
How are the seeds that you're selling, how are they produced, and where are they grown? They're obviously not grown in Wisconsin right now.
No, and also this year in Wisconsin, we were planning on doing seed production in Wisconsin, but right now, Wisconsin does not have an import permit, and in order for us to get foundation seed into the country, we would need to import it from Canada, because right now we import from Canada registered seed, which is the class right underneath certified seed. We grow that out for 1 year, make sure that we adhere to the standards, and then that becomes certified seed, which we sell to farmers for grain production.
Are you growing it in Canada or in other states?
So we do have production in Canada, but we also have production that we only get registered seed and grow it out 1 year right now domestically. That is done in North Dakota, Minnesota, and Kentucky.
And do you sell different varieties of seeds? Like you can get different varieties of tomato plants?
Yes, we do. Right now, the market is really strong in the grain market, the fiber, which is historically in Wisconsin, that's what the market was for, fiber. But right now, the fiber market and the infrastructure needs are not quite where they need to be to have that capital investment, because the market right now is really on the grain, and on the food side of the grain is really the hottest market. And organic production is really the hottest market sector right now.
Well, let's talk about all of the different uses this plant has. Senator Teston, when you authored this bill with Representative Jesse Kramer, you said you hoped to bring rural high-tech manufacturing to Wisconsin. Can you explain what you mean by that, rural high-tech manufacturing, and how that can possibly be connected to the hemp plant?
Sure. Well, what's kind of unique about this, so initially when Representative Kramer approached me about being the Senate lead on this bill, I immediately said, absolutely not. When you're saying industrial hemp, I thought immediately he was going to be trying to legalize marijuana in the state. And so he said, no, Senator, that's not what we're trying to do. Let me sit down and talk with you. And so I went down to his office, and I sat down with him and his staff and Representative Culp, and we were going over all the different uses for this plant. I mean, traditionally, as Ken mentioned, here in the state, it's primarily been in the textile industry. But with advances in technology and research, you are seeing the fibers of the plants being used in brake pads for vehicles, insulation for homes. It's being used as composite plastics for building materials, even graphene for batteries, Kevlar for fire retardant material. And then the oils themselves, CBD oil, which so many different benefits there, omega-3s within the oils. I mean, you can go into many large grocery stores right now, chains, and you can go and find hemp hearts, hemp seeds. And so where we see this as being high-tech manufacturing for rural areas is that our hope is processors are going to come into these areas and set up shop and process the grain, the fibers, the stalks, the seeds, and hopefully send it on to whatever uses it's going to be made for. And I even talked to an individual who is looking to set up a processing plant within the 24th Senate District to use the industrial hemp plant to extract ethanol, which I had no idea you could do that. So, I mean, there are so many different uses, tens of thousands of uses for this. And the favorite story I love to tell about this is that when we had the committee hearing in the state Senate, a committee, we had a hemp farmer from Kentucky come up, and she had a basket of different materials and products you can make out of this. And obviously here in the state, we pride ourselves We like to have a nice beverage every once in a while, and she had a jar of Kentucky moonshine that was made from industrial hemp. So I think you're going to see, even within like the craft beer industry, there's going to be applications.
And that's not a controlled substance, I take it. will Wisconsin soon be known as America's Hempland? That's a phrase that Jesse Kramer coined.
Yes. I believe wholeheartedly that it will be. We do production in many states, but we were really excited when Wisconsin came on. There's a reason that Wisconsin once was the leading producer in America, and it has to do, with our environment here. And hemp is going to grow really well here, but we also have a commodity of, farmers and people that are forward thinking, willing to kind of step out of the box and bring some of these new products to market. And for us, we are really excited to have Wisconsin open up, because we already see that, yields are going to be pretty dominant here in this area.
Well, as I mentioned in the intro, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson both grew hemp on their farms in Virginia. How did we end up with a ban on this product in the U.S.?
Hey, really, it's because of its close affiliation with its cousin, the marijuana plant. They look similar, and so I think at the time there was the marijuana craze, and a lot of people were kind of scared of it. And so that was our biggest challenge, is that, again, we had to really educate. Myself included, initially when I was first proposed this idea, I didn't know what it was, and so as I took the time to educate myself, as we worked with our colleagues and worked with other members of the legislature, it became pretty clear that, this isn't what we thought it was. In fact, I remember, I think it was years ago when this bill was first introduced, and this is a bill that for the past several sessions, it's been put forth by Republicans and Democrats, and it's always hit the same roadblock because of its appearance of its cousin, the marijuana plant.
Well, also until 2014, it was illegal under any circumstances to grow it in the U.S. Larry, what are the differences?
Well, and to the senator's point, when you look back in history, we just didn't have the science that we have now and the testing that can be done to ensure that nobody's going to game the system and that there aren't any psychoactive qualities to the plants that are grown is so robust now and so available. The state requires testing of the crops to make sure the THC, the psychoactive component, is as low as is required. And with most, if not all, of the farmers that I've talked to, they say they're going to do their own testing along the way, even before the required testing, just to understand more. It really is a pilot program. They're doing research. They're learning about what happens here under our climatic and soils situations. And so, in the 30s and 40s, they didn't have the availability of that kind of certainty.
Well, we've got it allowed in the U.S. under certain restrictions right now with the Farm Bill of 2014, but this past April, the Hemp Farming Act of 2018 was introduced in the U.S. Senate, and if it's passed, it would remove industrial hemp from the federal list of controlled substances. Patrick, how significant is that?
That would be huge. That would remove so many of the roadblocks and red tape that we had to navigate. And again, I give a lot of credit to Larry, because with his work and when he was with Ledge Council, we were really able to thread the needle on our law to make sure that we could do as much as possible what was allowed under federal law. And so if this bill can get through Congress and signed into law by President Trump, it's going to remove all these hurdles completely. And so we don't have the issues like we did just recently when we had to sit down with the Department of Justice and come to an agreement that, things like CBD oil derived from industrial hemp is not going to be illegal here in the state.
Yeah, this isn't the kind of new industry that it's just a wide open world. There are significant hurdles that have to always be crossed to make sure that you're threading, as he said, that needle. And it is really quite challenging. And if at the federal level that changes, we have built into our state's law flexibility to react to that change. So this is a living kind of law.
And it looks like the bill is going to pass just this week. The U.S. Senate, without objection from any lawmaker or any party, adopted legislation recognizing the growing economic potential of industrial hemp, as well as, quote, its historic relevance. So unanimous support, and that seems to be paving the way for this new bill. You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the legalization of hemp farming in Wisconsin with State Senator Patrick Teston, a Republican of Stevens Point, Larry Kunipacki, he's the general counsel with the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance, and Ken Anderson, founder and CEO of Legacy Hemp of Prescott, Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you've got questions or comments on hemp farming, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage, and I'll read it live on the air. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the differences and similarities between hemp and its close cousin marijuana and the challenges that may pose for growers. Here's some music by Luke Bryan.
Here's to the farmer, the plants, the fields, and the spring that turn from green to that harvest honey. Hold one up for the banker downtown. Got him on his feet with handshake money. Here's to the farmer's wife that loves him every night. Raising a son, raising a daughter. They gather around the table, send it up to the father. Somehow they get closer when times get harder. Here's to the farmer.
Some call it marijuana.
Peter Tosh taking us into our next segment of Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio as we explore newly legalized hemp farming in our state with our guests, State Senator Patrick Teston, Larry Kunipacki of the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance, and Ken Anderson of Legacy Hemp. I'm Glenn Moberg. Hemp was banned for decades because it is closely related to marijuana. In fact, biologically, it's the same plant. With one exception, it doesn't have enough of the active chemical ingredient THC to get you high. I want to spend a few minutes talking about the similarities and differences between hemp and marijuana and the fact that while hemp is now legal in more than 30 states, the cultivation and possession of recreational marijuana is now allowed in 9 states, even though it is still prohibited by federal law. Medical marijuana is allowed in 26 states, although it too is banned by federal law. You can weigh in at 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/route51, and I will read it live on the air. Recreational marijuana now allowed in Colorado, Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, Alaska, Maine, Massachusetts, Vermont. Medical marijuana is allowed in 28 states. Pat Teston, why not Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's the politics right now. You know, there were a number of individuals, and I think the governor has even come out and said that he's opposed to any medical or recreational marijuana here in the state. And so there's a number of my colleagues who I've spoken with who have expressed the same. Now, for me, I'm not there on recreational, but when you talk about medical, I'm open to that discussion. I think when you take a look, especially at like the opioid crisis and epidemic that we have here in the state, I've talked to veterans who have issues with PTSD or they're on so many opioids that it's destroying their insides, that we should be able to have an avenue for them. But that's where I think, too, at least under this law, the Farm Freedom Act and the industrial hemp law, that things like CBD oil are a great avenue and can provide some of those alternatives as opposed to the opioids that we prescribe.
Larry Kunipacki, do you favor legalizing either recreational or medicinal marijuana?
Well, I'm here on behalf of Wisconsin Hemp Alliance, and the Hemp Alliance takes the position that it's going to narrowly focus on industrial hemp, and really for a lot of the same reasons that the senator just mentioned, that we think that part of the reason that we've seen the success we've seen initially, not only having a unanimous vote in our state legislature in both houses, which is just almost it's just unusual, and having, you know, seven of our congressional delegations signing on at the federal level. You know, this is the kind of universal support we have, we think, at this point, is because we're staying into that single lane.
You've drawn a line between the two. Ken Anderson, as a leader and founder of Legacy Hemp, how do you feel about recreational or medicinal marijuana?
Well, I can tell you the tide has definitely changed. Myself, I think that as far as the medical side, I am 100% for. But it really, the differentiation is very important. And to see what has been happening, it is kind of amazing, because I've been involved with hemp professionally since 2009. And I know that before, when we were talking to farmers about, you know, possibly getting them the ability to grow hemp, you know, once they found out that there was no THC in what we were asking them to do and no drug value, it always was, well, why can't we grow it? And to see what's happening now in the United States, you know, I believe that marijuana is more legal in the United States and definitely more actively pursued in the United States than in industrial hemp. So
if medical marijuana or recreational marijuana was somehow to become legal in the United States, would Legacy Hemp be interested in going into that market?
No.
You would not. You want to stick with hemp cultivation.
That's correct. We get many times we've been asked to get involved in that industry. And even in Minnesota, I was asked to put together a team to try and get one of the licenses for Minnesota. And it's not something we are interested in.
Ken, I'd like to get you to weigh in on this. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that hemp and marijuana are both essentially strains of the same plant, cannabis. Are there any significant differences besides the amount of THC the plants contain? Because botanically, they seem identical. They're both cannabis plants. They have the same Latin name.
Yeah, that is true. And I mean, the same can be said for dogs. You know, a poodle and a German Shepherd are both in the canine species, but they're totally different.
And, so what we're talking about is the difference between a poodle and a German Shepherd instead of a dog and a cat.
Yes, that's correct. And really, the only true definition for industrial hemp would be cannabis sativa L with the threshold of 0.3% or less THC. So scientifically, they're the same plant. What differentiates them is definitely the THC content.
We have heard from critics that if you allow hemp cultivation, that people will be able to grow marijuana inside a hemp field, and nobody will be able to differentiate between the two. Ken?
I'd love to take that one on. I mean, this is always kind of humorous to me, because anyone that knows anything about both crops would know that that's the last thing you'd want to do. If you really wanted to grow marijuana in a field, I would recommend you do it in a cornfield or something of that sort, because cross pollination is always going to happen. If you're looking to grow marijuana, you're going to grow a female plant only. You don't want it to pollinate. Therefore, the resin of the plant is trying to attract that pollen, and that resin is going to be the THC content or CBD in hemp production. So basically, if you know anything about the plants, that's the last thing you'd want to do. And we've said for a long time, you know, the DEA loves to like swarm into these grow ops, and they go in with their machine guns and machetes, and they cut them down, and they have a big press release about it. But really, if they wanted to destroy these crops, you would just pollinate them with industrial hemp pollen. In fact, in the state of Washington, they've actually made it so that, you know, the marijuana industry is so scared of cross-pollination of industrial hemp that if you have a hemp field and you're licensed in the state of Washington to grow industrial hemp, and a marijuana producer comes in with a license, if you're within 5 miles of that marijuana grow op, you have to destroy your crop so that you do not cross-pollinate the marijuana crop.
But the cross-pollination would affect the seeds of the next generation, correct? I mean, it's not going – if you grew a marijuana plant in a hemp field, it's not going to genetically change the marijuana plant for that generation. That marijuana plant will still produce THC.
It'll also produce seeds, and that's the last thing that a marijuana producer wants, because of the budding of the plant is what they're after. So that's why if you have a professional grow operation, you're going to make sure that you're only planting feminized seeds, so you only have females, or you're going to cull out all of the males, because that pollination is the issue. So basically it's saying, look, I don't know exactly where you live, but I know that if I go to any metropolitan area in our area, it'd be pretty easy to find marijuana. So I don't know where these guys are doing it, but I think that they know enough not to be trying to put it in the middle of a hemp field.
So marijuana is basically with the cannabis plant, you've got male plants and female plants. The flowers are on different plants. They're not on the same plant.
Yeah. In hemp, they do have something that's called monoecious, which means it's both male and female on the plant. But in marijuana, it's dioecious. You're going to have a male and a female. The for marijuana, you would only want to be growing the female plant.
So you wait for them to flower, and then you pull the male plants out. You leave only the female plants, and you let them develop more and more flowers and more resin, because that's where the THC is, correct?
That's correct. And you really need to find out if the males are well before they go into pollination stage.
And with hemp, do you primarily want male plants?
No.
Or doesn't it matter? It doesn't matter with you.
Well, so the male plants will not produce grain. So basically the male plants, after they pollinate, they will die off. So you're going to have, only female plants left at harvest time.
But people apparently do try to grow marijuana in hemp fields. We've got some examples here when federal authorities cracked down on the Menominee tribe and bulldozed their hemp fields. They claimed that the tribe was growing marijuana in the field along with the hemp. Now, the tribe denies it. And there's a former sheriff in Jackson County, Kentucky, Denny Payman, who claimed he was growing hemp, and authorities confiscated what they say were 71 marijuana plants in his field.
Yeah, it sounds like we probably shouldn't allow law enforcement into the hemp program to me. But the thing with the Menominee tribe too, the claims are one thing. Law enforcement, and I have plenty of friends in law enforcement, and I can say that the DEA has been nothing but good to work with in all my time doing this. Well, except for when they confiscated our seed in 2014, but that's a whole other story. But I can tell you that, many times if you look around the United States and you find all of these, they claim they took $2.5 million worth of marijuana off of the street. Well, they're eradicating feral hemp stands. And the amazing thing that they do about that is they never do it. If you really wanted to eradicate a cannabis plant, you would eradicate it before it goes to seed. But if you want to be able to eradicate that same crop the following year, you wait until after it seeds. You go in there, you knock it all down, you take all the plants away, but what's left is all of the seed on the ground, and the next year you can go and do it and get paid for it again. So my point is that even though in the Menominee tribe they claim that they were growing marijuana, if you can tell me and you can find their THC samples, it'd be the first time that it would be documented in the state of Wisconsin, because they have never proven that they were growing marijuana.
Larry Kunipacki?
Yeah, and I think that what we have to remember is if people want to raise flags on this, there will be opportunity for them to do that. And I think of that and back up what Ken's saying about the Menominee tribe situation. If there are people out there today in Wisconsin planting clones. There's a number of, we've got acres of seeds in the ground. Some of those farmers are going to learn from their research that they grew the wrong seed and they went over the 0.3 THC threshold. And under our state law, that crop will be destroyed. And they understand that. That's part of the risk. And there's some farmers that are out there planting cultivars, planting seeds that are likely to be pretty darn close to that 0.3, because it's just they have other characteristics that they're looking for. But remember, if they do go over 0.3, if someone wants to make a big scene out of it, they can call that marijuana. If they're at 0.4, if they're at 0.7, still well below any kind of psychoactive threshold, and not intentionally creating anything to fool anyone.
So if you're a hemp farmer and you try to do something like this, you could destroy your whole business.
Well, it would be a very bad choice if you tried to do it. And the key, though, is if we could see the actual tests, if their test was 0.4, well, they're certainly not growing it to try to create a psychoactive product. They grew something, and it turned out to have, you know, they say the plant goes hot. If it goes hot, it's still not psychoactive, but it has to be destroyed.
Let's go to the phones right now. Joel in Wausau has been waiting patiently. Joel, you're on Route 51.
Thank you, Glenn. The reason I'm calling, and I know these are state legislators, but I'm wondering, you know, I know it's against the federal law for marijuana to be legalized in states, but it's also against, I believe, an international law that was instituted during Reagan's administration. So I just wondered if you could talk about that a little bit and what it would actually take to change those things.
This is the first I've heard about an international law. Pat Teston, have you heard of anything like that?
No, I'm not aware of any international law.
We're drawing a blank on that, Joel, but we will talk about the federal law. Pat Teston, you know, these states have recreational marijuana right now, but it's still illegal. I mean, the federal government says growing recreational or medicinal marijuana is illegal, and they could crack down on the states if they wanted to.
Yeah, we're kind of at a weird cross section between what federal law says versus what individual states have allowed. And so, I mean, in relation specifically to industrial hemp, through the 2014 Farm Bill, Congress laid it out pretty clear that if a state sets up its own program to regulate industrial hemp, then it's legal. Then you almost get kind of a waiver from the Controlled Substance Act. And so that's why states that have instituted this have allowed this crop to come back. But those states that haven't, and whether you're talking about industrial hemp or recreational or medicinal marijuana, the DEA as well as the Federal Department of Justice have said, yes, that is in fact illegal. And I guess, and Larry could probably chime in on this, that they would have the potential to come in and crack down on that, but we haven't seen that yet.
Are you surprised that the Trump administration hasn't cracked down on this experiment by these nine states? You know, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has said has warned that he might do it.
Yeah, I mean, there was the memo that came out last year that said, you know, there's going to be that crackdown, but we haven't seen it. And so I think the good news is that on the industrial hemp side is that with the legislation that is going through Congress, introduced by Senator Mitch McConnell, has broad support from every end of the political spectrum. When you have individuals like Congressman Mark Pocan of Madison and then Congressman Glenn Grothman, who are polar opposites, that see that this is a good idea to reintroduce in the states, that tells you that there's broad support. And the fact that the Farm Freedom Act at the state level passed unanimously in both houses. If you would have told me in the early process, in the early days when we first introduced this bill back in late March of 2017, that we would get unanimous support, I would have said you're crazy. It was never going to happen. But the day that the Senate passed it and we had every senator vote in support of it, I was shocked.
Larry?
And I would add to that, you know, the one saying that I knew about the law before I went to law school is the one saying I seem to use the most now after, and that is possession is 9/10 of the law. And what we've seen here is that because there are states who have entrench themselves into this industry. It's a big industry in these states. It isn't just, you know, you don't just sweep the paper off the table at this point. It would be fantastically disruptive in those areas if they decided to make these moves.
And there could be a political price to pay for that in those states.
There could be a price in a lot of contexts. And so I think that the reason why you haven't, basically what Jeff Sessions did is he said, we're going to leave it up to our people out there on the ground in the states to make these calls. And they've looked around them and they themselves and they've said, you know, maybe it's too late. There's too much traction here.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the legalization of hemp farming with State Senator Pat Teston, Larry Kunipacki, the General Counsel with the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance, and Ken Anderson, founder and CEO of Legacy Hemp of Prescott, Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you've got questions or comments for our guests, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put one on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/route51, and I'll read it on the air. We're going to take a short break. Here's music by Ella Fitzgerald.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had some chicks, E-I-E-I-O. Put a chick-chick here, a chick-chick there, here, chick, there, chick, everywhere, chick-chick. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had some ducks, E-I-E-I-O. With a quack-quack here, a quack-quack there, here, quack, there, quack, everywhere, quack, quack, chick, chick, here, chick, chick, there, here, chick, there, chick, everywhere, chick, chick. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
I see the seasons come and go, sending rain, fire, and snow. I'm at the mercy of it all, this life I choose. Sometimes I hang my head and cry, as that evening train goes by, wish it could take me far away from these farmer blues.
Yodel boy.
Oh, holy.
Marty Stewart and Merle Haggard taking us into our final segment of Route 51 as we talk about legalized hemp farming with State Senator Pat Teston, a Republican from Stevens Point, Larry Kunipacki of the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance. That's a newly formed state association bringing together growers, processors, retailers, and consumers of hemp products, and Kent Anderson, the founder and CEO of Legacy Hemp, a hemp seed and marketing company based in Prescott, Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Got time to squeeze in a phone call if you'd like to try. 1-800-780-9742. Pat Teston, Wisconsin's Menominee Tribe of Indians has had ambitions to grow hemp for a number of years. They protested and they sued for their right to do so. They were even raided by federal authorities when they established a hemp crop. And we've got the St. Croix Chippewa of Wisconsin taking steps to begin their own hemp crop. And they're now in a lawsuit with the Wisconsin Attorney General. How did you and your fellow legislators consider tribal nations when you wrote this bill?
Well, and that's a great question, Glenn. It was one that we sat down, in fact, lawyers were on the table, and we had these very same discussions of what's going to be allowed, what isn't going to be allowed. And Larry, correct me if I'm wrong, but because of the interesting cross-section that we're in, that it is considered a controlled substance by federal law, that we decided we're going to make this uniform across the board for everyone, that if you want to grow industrial hemp, you just have to go through the application process, and if you get approved, you're good to go.
And we really couldn't we couldn't really authorize any more than that for even for our tribal nations in the state. And there were requests that we attempt to do so, but we concluded legally that the federal law just really didn't allow us to carve out an additional opportunity for even for those sovereign nations. And that's one of the things that will change with if federal action is taken, as we're hoping.
Larry, Ken, why don't I move to you? Do you deal with Native American hemp growers or producers either here in Wisconsin or in other states?
Yes. And, you know, to me, this is something that when I hear sovereign nation and then another sovereign nation making rules for that sovereign nation, I wonder if we both have the same, you know, term sovereign. Because for me, Alex Whiteplume is someone who back in 2000 kind of kicked off a big hemp movement in Pine Ridge. And he was his TO Spay and their tribal government allowed him to grow hemp, and the DEA raided it and took him down and many others. And that kind of really started the resurgence of the Native communities trying to get involved. And for me, I see, especially in the Native communities, that, you know, we have struggling farmers here in Wisconsin and all over the country, but the Native communities are, this is something that could really help provide economic development. And so it's near and dear to my company and to many others to help these sovereign nations get off the ground. So I work with Winona LaDuke in Minnesota. I work with Alex White Plume out in South Dakota. And I'd really like to see the kind of everything open up for everyone.
Larry, are there Native American companies or tribal industries involved at this point with the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance?
Yes, we've definitely had conversations, and one of the things that I think is striking or consistent through all those conversations is if you think about the balance that this crop can have with the landscape, as the senator pointed out in some of his opening remarks, it matches up well with philosophies of people who look for sustainability. And so that seems to be a real recurring theme with the people from the tribal interests that I've talked to.
Wisconsin's Farm Freedom Act allows hemp farming but not CBD oil production. CBD oil is said to help people suffering from chronic pain or seizures. Pat Teston, can you comment on that?
Well, I can, and just for some clarification, you can manufacture, possess, and sell CBD oil if it is derived from an industrial hemp pilot program, either here in the state or any other state that has an industrial hemp pilot program. And I think it's important to differentiate that you can derive CBD oil from two different ways. You can get it from the industrial hemp plant, which is legal now here in the state, or you can derive it from the marijuana plant, which is kind of in a gray area, which we'll probably have to do some clarification. And in previous sessions and this last session, CBD oil derived from a marijuana plant, we do allow some exemptions through Lydia's law that you can possess it, you can't sell it or manufacture it, but you can possess it with a doctor's note. And that was one of the challenges that we ran into with the Wisconsin Department of Justice. And
Attorney General Brad Schimmel in a press release said he was worried about CBD oil being sold over the counter without a prescription because he said the oil, if unregulated, could contain THC and cause problems for children and other users.
And there are some consumer protection concerns there, but that's why it's important to know if you know it's derived from an industrial hemp pilot program, it's going to be a safe product because you are going to have that chain of custody. And that's why when we sat down with the Attorney General and his team and we laid out why we believe our case is right, that CBD oil derived from hemp is legal, that they were able to reverse that decision. And a lot of it, again, comes back to Larry Konopacki, who, when we sat down with the Attorney General and his team, he hit a grand slam. I mean, he walked them through what's allowed under federal law, what's allowed under our law, and really clarified the issue to bring some certainty to our CBD processors that want to do business here in the state.
And I'd give a lot of credit to the Attorney General and his team, as the senator said. You know, it takes a lot of effort to wrap your head around the complexities of this situation, and they did it, and they did it quickly. And you know, we couldn't have been happier with their engagement. And to be honest, what you just read there in terms of the Attorney General's concerns, we absolutely share those concerns.
Gentlemen, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we are completely out of time. So I'm going to give each of you 15 seconds, and we're going to start with you, Ken Anderson. What is the future of hemp farming in Wisconsin?
Well, first off, I'd like to thank the Farm Bureau, Larry, and Senator Teston. I mean, to watch this come through and come unanimous through the House and Senate was amazing, and I appreciate being able to work in Wisconsin. But the future's bright, and, you know, I think we will be the largest producer of industrial hemp within the next 2 years.
Larry?
Our focus will be on making sure that something that's growing this quickly doesn't outgrow its the intended path, in the sense that we need to make sure that we have the opportunities available and that we build this system from a background legal perspective that as is needed to let it flourish.
Pat Teston, you got 10 seconds.
I'm really excited the opportunities that this is going to have for our farmers here in the state. And for anyone who's interested in growing, make sure that you have a buyer lined up at the end of the process. Talk to guys like Ken Anderson. Talk to guys like Larry Konopacki to make sure this is a right fit for your operation.
All right. Thank you, all three.
Every Friday night, there's a steady cloud of dust that leads back to a field filled with pickup trucks. Got old Hank cranking way up loud. Got coolers in the back, tailgate's down. There's a big fire.
We want to thank today's guest, State Senator Pat Teston, a Republican from Stevens Point, Larry Kunipacki of the Wisconsin Hemp Alliance, and also Ken Anderson, founder and CEO of Legacy Hemp, a hemp seed and marketing company based in Prescott, Wisconsin. You can find out more about Legacy Hemp at legacyhemp.com. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Levon Helm, Montgomery Gentry, Luke Bryan, Peter Tosh, Ella Fitzgerald, Marty Stewart and Merle Haggard, and Tim McGraw. Next week on Route 51, we preview this year's Midwest Renewable Energy Fair with keynote speaker, humorist, singer-songwriter, and intermittent pig farmer Michael Perry. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.